học gà nướng, học vịt lộn, học vịt sữa, trứng cút lộn, bắp xào đây.
Hey, this is Neil Mackay, your host of a Vietnam podcast. Now, before we get started on this episode, I wanted to share with you about one of my favorite affiliate partners, and that is Fiverr. I've been using Fiverr for years for everything from ordering YouTube thumbnails to keyword research, writing podcast articles, even to Canva designs and thumbnails and more. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a podcaster, or anyone in between, Fiverr has got you covered. It really is the go-to platform if you want to find freelancers offering a massive range of services to help you on any project. Maybe you need a stunning new logo or just a short animation, whatever you need, you can find it on Fiverr. What I love the most is how easy Fiverr makes it to connect with talented freelancers from around the world, all at prices that will fit whatever your budget is. Plus, with Fiverr's secure payment system, you can trust that your transactions are safe and secure. No dodgy people you meet on Facebook groups that disappear with your money and never give you what you want. What, that's only happened to me? As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you use the link and at no extra cost to you. As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you click my link and you buy something, all at no extra cost to you. And best of all, you will be directly supporting the making of this podcast that you're listening to for free, but it is not free to make. So why wait? Head over to somewhere that you've probably never been before. It's called the show notes. So whatever app you're listening in, if it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anything at all, head to the show notes, click on my special link, and then you can browse thousands of gigs ready to help you with your next project. And now, let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
Welcome to Season 5 of 7 Million Bikes, a Vietnam podcast. My name is Neil Mackay and I'm your host. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy the podcast today. My guest today is Nhia Mai, all the way from Vietnam, but currently living in Dublin. So we caught up over Zoom. So there might be a little bit of an issue with the quality or a little bit of a lag sometimes, but hopefully it's not too detrimental to the quality of the podcast. And you enjoy this episode as we talk about his life moving from Vietnam all the way to my home country, Scotland, and then ending up in Dublin. And he's also a stand-up comedian as well. So we talk a little bit about that. He also is the host of a podcast, which has just started recently called The Hot Podcast, which is with a whole team of amazing Vietnamese talented people, comedians, producers, designers, to create the podcast and showcase Vietnamese talent around the world. And they also have guests from other countries as well. So I will be hopefully appearing on that podcast soon as well. So make sure you check that out. If you do enjoy 7 Million Bikes of Vietnam podcast, make sure that wherever you are listening from right now, you go hit the follow, subscribe, love button, whatever it is. Turn on the notifications as well, because that means you'll never miss an episode of a Vietnam podcast. Also, if you are enjoying it, please leave a review. That would be amazing. You can do that, again, on whatever platform you're listening from. Apple Podcasts is great. But you can also go to Facebook and give the page a like or a follow and leave a review there. Make sure you check us out on all the usual social media channels, as well as Facebook. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. And there'll be some video content from this episode on YouTube because we recorded it on Zoom. We are not on TikTok. That's never going to happen. So don't go searching on there. And it's a very small chance that you'll ever find us on Twitter. So don't worry about that. But you can get it on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Go and give it a like, a follow, subscribe. Make sure you don't miss an episode. And if you are enjoying 7 Million Bikes, a Vietnam podcast, you can now support the podcast on patreon.com. There's a link in the show notes. There you can become a member and you get different benefits depending on the level that you sign up for. To make a Vietnam podcast takes a lot of time and it does take money as well. And it will always be available for free. But if you are enjoying this content and you want to support, then that would be really, really appreciated. And if you don't want to become a member, there's also a note in the show links. You can buy me a coffee as well at coffee.com. And again, that would be hugely appreciated. So make sure you check all of them out. Give us a like on Facebook, subscribe on Instagram, do all of that good stuff, and enjoy the episode. So thank you so much to the people who've already joined on Patreon and the people who've been donating coffees from around the world. I recently got bought coffee from a man all the way in Berlin. This is the world that we live in. So that would be amazing if you want to do that as well. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to season 5 of 7 Million Bikes, a Vietnam podcast. I'm your host, Neil Mackay. Thank you for listening. I hope you've been enjoying previous episodes of a Vietnam podcast. Now, my guest today is a fellow comedian. We've performed together, what seems like many, many years ago here in Saigon. He's now based in Ireland after moving to Scotland, my home country, back in 2014, where he first started stand-up, and then in 2019 relocated to Ireland, where he has been killing it on the comedy stage there until we know what happened. We had a bloody global pandemic. So welcome to the podcast, Nia Mai. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's 9 in the morning, but I had my coffee, so I'm ready to go.
Good, good. Well, yeah, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon here, Saigon time. And I actually, we can let the listeners know, I was running late today for the podcast in true Saigonese fashion. I had a flat tire. But again, in true Saigonese fashion, I just needed to drive to the first street corner, had it pumped up for 5,000 dong, and I was on my way. But it still sent me back a bit. So I apologize for being late. Thank you for it. Is this early for you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But I usually wake up basically near to noon. So yeah, thanks for like waking me up.
Right away, you can tell that you've lived outside of Vietnam for far too long if you're waking up at noon, because that is not something that Vietnamese people do.
No, of course not.
It's always blown me away. It took me so long to get into the rhythm of Vietnam that basically everyone wakes up at 6 a.m. I remember traveling to school, teaching in public school, and driving at 7 in the morning, and already the roads are just absolutely packed. You're like, where are all these people going? What are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's like when I was like growing up in Vietnam, you know, you have to like get up, like, I think I remember getting up like 5:30 in the morning, just to get my little routine in, and then catch the school bus to school. But you do have that routine ingrained into you for a long period until you actually move out of the country and you realize that you don't actually need to get up at 5 in the morning.
It's one of the things that makes Vietnam, I think, so charming. When you I remember being here as a tourist the first time and going around Quang Kiem Lake in Hanoi, and there's just tens and tens of elderly women doing all their exercises with their arms, and you're like, how is that even exercise? But I mean, I guess moving is better than not moving. So while it's probably not the most efficient exercise, it's doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, being able to just to go outside and exercise, you know, just finding an excuse to go outside. Growing up back in Vietnam, you know, like, so my dad, because both my parents have habits of like just waking up early and doing things before they go to work, so they always tell me to wake up, and even then, like, because, you know, like, sort of that philosophy of like getting up, rise and shine, getting up early so you can start work early, you know, the idea of like time's money. Even though, yeah, because so this is one thing my grandmother used to tell my dad. It was basically like even a beggar has to wake up early, you know, because the idea that he wake up early and there'll be already people already there, so he can ask for money. But if he gets up early, he can ask for more money. You know, the sort of logic, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost like the Vietnamese version of the early bird catches the worm, I guess. The early beggar catches the money, I guess. Now, you're also hosting a new podcast called The Hot Podcast, which is now, you're up to what, episode 4 or 5, is it?
It's all right. Yeah, I mean, we have 7 episodes. You can binge listening them after this.
Nice, nice. I've listened to one of them. I listened to your one about the Hanoi Comedy Festival, which sounded great. So make sure if you are listening, you check out the Hot Podcast. Hot Podcast, same as 7 Million Bikes. I'm pretty sure you can find it anywhere you can get podcast, right?
Yeah, we're available on, you know, Spotify, Google, and Apple, you know, just all the major podcasting platforms.
And then, so how did you get into that?
I guess it's one of those, because with the global pandemic lockdowns, there was an inevitability of like, getting into podcasting way. So essentially, I have a friend who's, he's also a comic, a Vietnamese comic, but he was living in Belgium at the time, but he was very active in the Saigon scene before he moved over. So he thought, why don't we make a podcast? So the idea was that, so it's not just like just one person just having like unstructured, just one person talking for like 2 hours. So what we wanted to do was to have a panel show, sort of like 8 out of 10, like, the one in the very popular UK, like Mock the Week, or 8 out of 10 cats. So that's sort of format. So what we wanted to do was to promote like Vietnamese comic. So we have like a panel, a host, a panel of like 2 or 3 Vietnamese comics, and a guest who is not Vietnamese, usually a comic from another country, and we talk about like different topics, exchanging ideas and jokes, engaging in like cultural exchange, but at the same also promoting Vietnamese talent to a much wider audience.
We'll be right back.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
Yeah, I saw the recent episode with Woman 2 and J.K. Hobson, who both been previous guests on this podcast. They're actually two of the top rated episodes on 7 Million Bikes. Actually, Woman 2 is the most listened to episode of a Vietnam podcast. And JK,
I'm not surprised.
I think though I got accused of clickbait because I called that podcast Vietnam's raunchiest comedian, which I think it's not even clickbait. It's just fact, right? But we didn't actually really talk much about like anything raunchy. We just had a discussion like I do with all my guests about them. And I had one friend who listens to the episodes, and he messaged after it came out, and he's like, that episode wasn't what I thought it was going to be about. You called it Vietnam's raunchiest comedian. But maybe I need to get better at my titles. I think you could probably just put the word sex in every title and it would just get more listens, right? Do you know what?
Sex sales,
It is so true. Like I noticed recently I did a Facebook post with one of my recent guests, and I won't say her name, but one of the female guests I had on, and I shared the post on Facebook. And then obviously you can see the kind of analysis of who's looked at the post and whatnot. And because it was a picture of a female, the amount of men that had clicked it was like 70% to 30% female. When generally my podcast listeners, if I look at any sort of stats, it's 50-50. There's no real difference, 49-51 or whatever. But I was like, this is just how basic men are. Like, we are that basic. They're scrolling through Facebook. They see a post for a podcast. They don't care about the podcast. They just see a pretty girl on the picture and they click it 70%.
Yeah, man. And I can imagine I'm just actually listening to the podcast and be like, when she's talking about sex, come on, I need something. Oh.
Yeah, so I've learned my lesson. So you're going to be the last male that I'm going to interview, and it's all women from now on.
That's good. We need more women in comedy.
Well, that's true as well. That's very true as well. So how did you get into comedy in Scotland? So this is actually crazy because you're the exact opposite to me. So I started doing comedy in Vietnam and I'm from Scotland, and you started doing comedy in Scotland and you're from Vietnam. How did this happen?
I didn't actually start comedy in Scotland. I actually started in Vietnam, but...
Oh, you've just ruined my story then?
I didn't... Oh, so... No, but like you're talking about, like, well, I mean, if you're talking about doing comedy consistently, I started in Scotland, but a couple of years back when I was doing school, like the school had a talent show, and I signed up for that. And during that time, I already started watching a lot of like stand-up comedy on YouTube. You know, like watching a lot of Russell Peters, Eddie Murphy. And I figured, you know, I just want to give it a try. You know, why not? And so I wrote some jokes. I went on stage. I did my like 5-minute set. I did quite a bit. Did pretty well. And then I did another one after that. But I didn't do it again for the next 2 years. Because I was just focusing on my studies and, you know, just the idea of being high school is aria of like dramas already. You know, not great ground for material. When I moved to Scotland, to Edinburgh for uni, I started joining a lot of like different societies, and one of them was the comedy society there. And then I signed up for their fresher show. And that's when I started like actually doing comedy like a bit more consistently and started like actually working, started performing more regularly, from that point on.
And how were the Scottish audiences?
Initially, like, because it was like, I was part of society, so we did like a uni show. So the audience were mostly like students. So, you know, like university student, particularly in the UK, you know, tend to be a bit more liberal. So, you know, a bit open-minded about things. So I didn't do actual shows in the clubs or like the pubs. I just started doing them, but I didn't do many of them back then. So I didn't get the, so, you know, students, they were a bit more nicer and more open-minded. But it wasn't until I started doing the Fringe, like around maybe 2016, you know, I started developing my, performing to, you know, just normal people. So, you know, that's what, just an interesting experience, and you learn how to like react to certain situations. You become more like quick-witted. So, you know, I find, you know, Scottish people, and, you know, Scottish people in general, I think, you know, they have a very good, they have a good sense of humor, you know, in general. You know, they're able to laugh at anything. And also, I think because, you know, the accent is already funny enough. You can sound funny just by speaking in a Scottish accent, you know.
I was going to say, whose accent was funny, yours or the Scottish people?
Both. You know, it's you're just having a normal conversation where a Scottish person is already, you're already laughing, you know, like just it's like they're mocking, it's just like, you know, they're just mocking at everything in their life. So self-deprecating. At the same time, part of my act, I would just like do a Scottish accent in there, and it would just sound shocking to a lot of people. Wow, that's very real, you know. Like.
And can you do your Scottish accent for me?
I can try it. You're right, boss. You're right. Okay. You're right, man. Oh, great. Great. Hey, perpetrator.
The perpetrator.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I do a joke about like Scottish people saying words with R in the middle. And I talk about journalist and murder and burger, but I've never used perpetrator. That's a great one. But the other one that people sometimes people ask me to say the purple burglar.
The purple burglar.
I've seen one on Facebook where if you ask a Scottish person to say space girl, it's the same as Spice Girls, which if probably people listening right now don't actually know the difference between what I said. So the first thing I said was S-P-A-C-E, space. And the second one I said was G-H-E-T-T-O, ghetto. So space ghetto is the same as a Scottish person saying spice girls.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, it's just, it's fun accent, especially if you're like from Glasgow. That's when you have the actual, like, you know, really rough Scottish accent. Like me, because I was living in Edinburgh, and Edinburgh is a bit more, it's a bit softer. Is actually closer to like the English accent, closer to like the English accent.
Oof, so it was a bit more careful. Imaginable. Be careful! You just offended every person from Edinburgh with that comment. Gee, don't go back to Edinburgh after saying that.
To be fair, Edinburgh University is already it's technically an English university in terms of student body. You know, like it's, It's a place for like Oxford pre-checks. That's when I found out.
So how did you end up then? So you're from Saigon originally. When did you move to Edinburgh and why did you choose Scotland?
I moved it like in September 2014, September 2014, you know, the startup term. I didn't actually choose Scotland in particular. It was more like because of the university and its reputation. So I went to like a British International School back in Vietnam, and I was just looking at uni options, and the UK was one of them. And at one point, I think my guidance counselor recommended Edinburgh to me. You know, it was a good, very good university, very reputable. And I figured, why not? So I applied it to Edinburgh University, and at the same time, I also applied it to several other Scottish universities. You know, like, and that's quite impressive. You know, like Scotland, for a very small country, you have a lot. They have a lot of like, you know, some of the greatest, some of the best universities in the world, and some of the oldest universities. Yeah, so I got an offer to Edinburgh University, and that's how I ended up in Scotland.
Once you arrived in Scotland and you'd been there for a while, and you experienced the Scottish weather, at what point did you regret your choice?
Basically, when I landed it. You know, I think it was very stormy outside, and you know, like, oh god, why? You know, when it was like summer, you imagine it was like around late summer in Saigon, and I flew to Edinburgh. It was already raining. It was already. I went outside. It was already cold, and I'm like, this is shit. but you know, like, I think it was pretty manageable. But even then, it wasn't until like, you know. I didn't really regret it until it was around like December, February to December up to March. I think that's when shit started kicking in. You know, this constant raining, the storm. You know, it wasn't the best kind of rain. It was like not even tropical rain. It was just really cold rain. It's just sad and depressing. But you know, anything for a good education for a good education. Weather wise, I did regret it a bit, but I guess but. Because of the people I met along the way, they kind of kept me warm all throughout those few years, you know. But yeah, it was just a different experience living on a different continent for a number of years. But I guess it was kind of expected, you know, because of the things you heard from people about Scotland and the UK in general. You know, like they always talk about I think that's the number one thing. You know, people always complain about the weather anyway. And that's why Scottish people go to Spain for the weekends.
Yeah, and I hope my people, and I know Scottish people, I hope they welcomed you with open arms. We are a very, very friendly people.
Yep. Most of the time, but yes, that is very true.
We have in Glasgow, we have a violent reputation, but we're also the friendliest people in the world.
Because all the Scottish people I met so far, they were very nice, you know, very funny people. Also, as I mentioned, you know, the Scottish sense of humor is like something else, you know, it's so dark, but it's so self-deprecating at the same time. And, you know, it's always quite nice. It's quite nice to hear, But all because of the accent.
Well, I remember when I lived in Melbourne and I was working with a Scottish girl, and she was from Glasgow as well, and she had like a rough Scottish accent. And she came over to my apartment. I introduced her to my friend who was on the couch. I just said, this is Kirk. And she walked up to him and she went, "My name's Zara, what's your name?" And even I was like, whoa, it was the most aggressive introduction you've ever seen in your life. And I looked at her and she's like, "What? I'm just telling them my name." I was like, that was like terrifying.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you had a similar, people kind of, they introduce themselves to you and you're like, I don't know if they're going to stab me or if they want to be my friend.
No, it's more like, I think I was quite surprised about how often people would ask you, like, whether you're all right or not. Like, "You're right, Bo. You're right." You know, when you learn English, right, you learn how to say, "How are you?" You know, like,
"I'm fine, thank you, and you?"
"I'm fine, thank you, and you?" But they come up to you, "You're right, Bo. I'm like, what is wrong with me? You know, like, is there anything wrong with me? I'm
like, is he telling me or is he asking me? I'm not sure what's happening right now.
You are both, you know, before they prepare you. You are both, all right? Yeah. Where you from, man? No, I think that. I think that you get a lot of, like, if you were living like in somewhere like Glasgow, but I think Edinburgh a bit more. Yeah, like I said, Edinburgh is a bit more. I guess they're a bit more gentler than Glaswegian. You know, yeah, upper, you know, capital. You know, the idea of, you know, people living in the capital city.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I never was a fan of Edinburgh growing up because I was a proud Glaswegian. But as an adult now, when I've been back to Edinburgh, I love it. It's like, wow, this is a beautiful city. I've never lived there, but I've had family that have lived there, and it's not as bad as I thought. But I still love Glasgow.
Yeah, Edinburgh is it's just a beautiful city, particularly with the hills. You know, you just walk up and down all the time. And then you just the castles and also the town center as well is some very beautiful sites.
And we have to talk about the whiskey.
Yeah, I didn't drink much whiskey while I was going to uni. I think there was I have a couple of them for like maybe the Burns night, you know, supper. I remember, like, because when my parents visited for my graduation, we went to a whiskey distillery. So that was good. That was quite fun. The whiskey is quite nice. You know, the whiskey is quite nice. But most of the time, you know, being a student, you know, you're living on a budget. You know, just go with cans of Tennent. You know.
Yeah. Or Buckfast. Did you try Buckfast?
I think regrettably, I think so. Yeah. You drink a lot of weird things on rugby night outs, you know.
When was the last time you made it back to Saigon?
While I was still in Scotland, I would go home like every summer. The first time I went back, I went for like the whole 3 months, and then it just shorter because of the Edinburgh Fringe, which would happen in August. And I didn't go home permanently until like after I graduated. So I came back to Saigon around late 2018, and I lived there for a year. You know, I started working for a bit before I moved to, and that's when I also started working on my master's application.
And then, so now you're doing your master's in Ireland, in Dublin.
Yeah, at Trinity College.
It's two very famous universities that you've been to, Edinburgh and Trinity College.
Yeah, two of the most famous non-English universities in the English-speaking world, I would say. At least on the like the British-Irish, on the British and Irish eye.
So what were the immediate reactions? What was the difference between the Irish and the Scottish, you noticed?
As I mentioned, you know, Scottish accent, it can be quite rough, whereas, you know, the Irish, they're a bit softer. I guess they're a bit similar, you know, like just revolving around drinking, sort of, and the hatred for the English. at the same time, you know, the hospitality, the welcomeness, you know, the friendliness, you know, I guess also Dublin is a bit flatter than Edinburgh, you know, because Edinburgh is a bit more hilly, you know, but I guess they're pretty much the same in terms of like the number of Americans at the university, you know, a large portion of American, you know, a lot of Americans, they trace their ancestry back to, you know, either of those two places, Ireland or Scotland. So some of these they feel a sense of attachment, you know, it's quite weird, but it's quite fun at the same time.
You know, I always found it weird when I lived in America and you met people and they'd be like, oh my God, you're from Scotland? I'm from Scotland too. And you'd be like, oh, cool. Where are you from in Scotland? Oh, I've never been there, but like my great, great, great granny was from like Skye or something. I don't know. And you're like, dude, you're not Scottish. Like,
yeah, I mean, you can just sub that with just switch that with Irish. It would just be the same conversation. You know, like, yeah, it's just great being here, you know, going back to my parents, my great-grand-mam's village in Kildare, you know. It's just...
I've talked about it with my wife and with other Americans. It's kind of like nice as well because America is a new country and everyone in America is from somewhere else, essentially, unless you're Native American. So while it's easy to make fun of it, it still makes sense that they they're aware of that they're from somewhere else and you'd want to go back to that. And as I just discussed on the last podcast, you know, I don't know how far back my generations go Scottish. I've got no interesting lineage as far as I know going back generations. So it's easy to mock, but I can understand why, you know, you would be proud of that.
Yeah, I think even like in the States at the moment, you know, the current president, Joe Biden, he's, you know, he's Irish. He still retained a lot of the links. I think I remember like when Biden won the election, I think his like village, I think in County Mayo, like celebrated.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Like, he actually still have like relatives. Yeah, it's the same like in like with Obama when we won the election. Yeah, somehow this random village in Kenya started celebrating because his dad was from there.
But yeah, so, yes, I mean
similar dynamics. It's quite fast.
Well, it's Scotland's shame that Donald Trump's mum is from Scotland. That's just like I'm so embarrassed about that. I'm glad it doesn't come up very often because we apologize to everyone for that.
I mean, at least the golf course in St. Andrews banned Donald Trump. So, I mean, there's some form of redemption.
I've seen some amazing placards of protest against Donald Trump with that Scottish sense of humour coming through. And I don't even want to repeat what half of them said. But my favourite, I think, was when it called him an orange Cheeto. Was a personal favourite.
Orange Cheetos.
So you're in Ireland at the moment. How's things going over there right now?
I don't know. I mean, the weather's getting better. I think that's one positive. But I think it's not ideal because with the lockdown being extended up until like the end of April. So I think it's going to be a few more rough months until, you know, things start to improve.
So what exactly are you allowed and not allowed to do?
So you can, you can move, you can go outside, but only you can still go outside like for walks, for exercise, like to buy stuff. But it has to be within like 5 kilometer radius from your home, unless it's for like a really essential reason. Like for work, otherwise. That's pretty much it. It's just, you know, just stay within your 5 kilometers.
And do you wish, I would imagine that you're still in Vietnam, or would you rather be in Ireland anyway?
Oh, yes, yeah. It's a weird dilemma. Like, of course, you know, that you might, like, because I would talk to my parents like on the phone quite often. And you imagine, like, every time I talk to my parents, they will be doing something, you know, like they'll be doing something like normal, like eating out in a restaurant or they're about to go to a wedding and you're just at home and you're doing nothing. You're just crying a lot of times. I feel like a part of me like wish I was still back in Vietnam, but at the same time, because I'm here because of all the people, all the friends I met, all the things I've done. So I feel, I feel I want to stick around for a bit longer. Yeah, and just hoping things improve at some point.
You could come back to Vietnam if you wanted to, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think like you have to sign up for like one of those repatriation flights, and they take a while, you know, to process. And I've seen like, you know, footage of those like repatriation flights. It's like, you know, you're leaving Mars or something. You know, just, you know, you're wearing like full PPE for like duration of flights. It's quite scary. I just want to, you know, you just want to be on a plane, you know, normally, you know. I can go back, but it's just a bit tricky at the moment.
Mm. My heart goes out to obviously everyone, like my family, obviously. So like, it's just so difficult after being here in Vietnam for the past year. We've just not experienced lockdown at all, really. I find it frustrating. Sometimes I hear people say, because in August we had I call it more like a slowdown, you know, where they close the bars and the restaurants or they limit it, but that's it. You know, it's just bars and restaurants and maybe like public gathering, well, events as well. So public gatherings, but they do it for a month, things go back to normal and then we carry on as normal. And I find it frustrating when I see expats post on Facebook groups like, oh yeah, when we were in lockdown in August or another lockdown's coming. Cause this month we've been in another slowdown because there was an outbreak. So bars have been closed or regulated to less than 20, 30 people. All my events have been cancelled. All gatherings have been cancelled. But apart from that, everyone still goes to work. Everyone can go. Apart from that, life is completely normal. And I still find it frustrating when I see people say like, oh yeah, we're in lockdown. It's like, no, we're not. We're not in lockdown at all. We're absolutely free. The bars are closed. That's it. The bars are closed. And even then, half of them are still open anyway. Whereas then, you know, when I speak to my family back home or people like yourself who for 1 year have been living under the harshest lockdowns. And so I just, yeah, as it's going on, I feel that worse and worse, which I know doesn't give you any comfort that I feel bad for you, but I just can't imagine how difficult it is. So I hope that you're doing well and staying mentally strong and having a creative outlet as well. It's good to do the podcast because you definitely need to have that outlet.
Definitely. I just, it's a bit frustrating, especially the way things have been handled since March. Opening up, locking up. It can be quite frustrating. I'm quite glad to have some sort of creative outlet at the same time, maintaining like a daily routine, trying to stay sane. But at the same time, hopefully things will improve. Hopefully, into the summer.
And I'm assuming with the vaccine rollout as well, that's going to help massively as well.
They're ramping it up at the moment. I think the aim is by autumn, but every adult will be offered a vaccine.
Oh, that's good. I was saying to my wife, as kind of young, healthy people, we're going to be waiting like 3 years for a vaccine or something like that. We are way down the list of people that need the vaccine, right?
I think this week they just start like vaccinating old people right now. Like people in my around my parents' age are starting to. Starting to get the vaccine.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a few more months before we get something injected in our arms.
Can you believe that we're living through this?
It's pretty surreal. Like I said, it's just one of those historic moments that's gonna define. Generations and going to have a long lasting impact, decades.
Yeah, I remember growing up, I always thought to myself, we're going to have to live through something at some point because, you know, I grew up through the 80s, the 90s, the noughties. Nothing happened, 9/11, sure. But apart from that, there was no great wars. There was no great famines. There was just almost endless prosperity for the whole world. Everything was just getting better and better, generally speaking, in terms of reductions of poverty, lifestyle, technology, everything was getting better and better. But I always remember growing up thinking that can't go on forever. Like all of our grandparents lived through a war or a stock market crash or something, something that was that generation defining, like you just said. So it was always on my mind that something had to happen, and now it has. And I've mentioned before, I feel like, and most people here in Vietnam feel like they won the lottery by the sheer luck that we are here in Vietnam, because for us, it's really not. There's definitely been hardships. I've lost my job. Life has changed. My family have had obviously hardships. And it's been a tough year, but not anything compared to the people that are having to go through it in the hotspots like the UK, the US, Ireland, things like that. So I am hoping for people over there it gets better soon.
Definitely. I think especially for comedy as well, besides the arts online gigs, a lot of us haven't like actually performed since March, a proper gig.
And are you apprehensive or nervous about getting back on stage?
Yeah, in a way, at the same time, I do try to write out new bits every now and then. Because I remember the last ever gig I did back in March, it didn't go that well.
Oh no.
So I did get laps and stuff, but you know, it didn't for my standards, you know, it didn't go quite that well. So I figured a part of me wanted to rectify that, you know, for my first gig, back post pandemic, you know. It's just been frustrating because I was supposed to do like an actual gig like back in late August, and then it got because of change in restrictions, so it got pushed back until like October, and then after that they announced like a second lockdown, a second national lockdown, and basically that was canceled altogether. It has been quite frustrating, and you know, because I'm living with so my housemate is also a comic, and both of us haven't actually performed since March, in Ireland since March, so you know, it's a both of us are just eager to get back on.
Well, good luck with the podcast. It's obviously going well, and I think we've talked about I'm going to be coming on the Hot Podcast quite soon, so I'm looking forward to that as well. What plans do you have for your podcast?
So at the moment we're hoping to expand our team. So especially we're interested in looking for Vietnamese comics, especially members of Vietnamese diaspora, and you know, it's actually a feature and have the and create so and hopefully allowing them to tell the stories on our platform. We also looking into having further collaboration with people in other fields, graphic designers, cartoonists, and whatnot, just to generate more content for our podcast. So there's a lot of, it's still relatively new and fresh, but it's exciting at the same time. So because there's so many things you can do with it, and you know, generally just having a bigger platform for Vietnamese talent.
That's awesome. And yeah, because I saw on your podcast you have, you know, Vietnamese comics who are based all around the world, and so that's exciting to see as well, because you know, this podcast is about anyone who's connected to Vietnam, so that can be a foreigner or a local, and now this season we're really expanding it out to talk to people like yourself, or we just talked to Nhi Corcoran, who's based in New York City, so we're wanting to now expand to talk to Vietnamese people around the world, whether they're first generation, second generation or not. We're just looking for people that are connected to Vietnam, because it is such a special country.
At the same time, also, you know, the idea of because our slogan is where Vietnam laughs with the world. So that's the idea, you know, you have Vietnamese comics and you have international comics as well. Joking around with each other. And you know, because the way we do our podcast, we do have segments, we do mini games and a lot of different activities. So it's just having a platform for them to express themselves, just beyond stand-ups or all genres. There are a lot of opportunities and also challenges at the same time. We're just looking for new people to join in. And you know, and at the same time, you know, for generating new listeners,
Well, hopefully, some of the listeners of 7 Million Bikes go and check out Hot Podcast and give those guys a listen. And you'll hopefully hear me on there soon as well. So we'll move on to the final questions that I ask everyone at the end of a Vietnam podcast. Living in Ireland, I imagine the traffic there is quite orderly and rule abiding, and not 7 million crazy motorbikes rushing about the city from every direction. But you're obviously from Saigon, and when you were growing up, was it as crazy here? There obviously wasn't 7 million motorbikes when you were younger, but was it still just as nuts as it is now?
Pretty much. I think while I was growing up, you know, the city was just expanding quite rapidly anyway. People were just driving. I think it was a bit more chaotic than before than now. Actually, I think even while I was growing up, people didn't wear helmets. You know, it was just optional.
Even when I moved here 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I think the helmet law had only just come into effect.
Yeah, wearing our helmets was optional. You still have like multiple generations on one mini bike.
Well, that still happens.
Yeah, a lot still happened. Of course, within and in your cell homes was still quite common back then. You know, things like rally hailing apps didn't exist. But yeah, I think it was just even then it was just a bit more chaotic. It was a bit more chaotic. You know, I think it started from like the 90s. Early 2000s, it was already like pretty crazy back then.
So we have over 7 million registered motorbikes in Saigon, over 45 million motorbikes across all of Vietnam. As we discussed, it's just an experience that you have to experience for anyone in their life. Just come to Vietnam and cross the road or get on a motorbike. But what is the unwritten rule of the road that you couldn't live without?
I think it has to be the one where like you just keep walking on, and hopefully there's an understanding between you and the drivers. You know, you just, you know, they'll make way for you. At the same time, you make way for them. You know, just it's still like a social. It's like the ultimate social contract. Living in Saigon.
So, what's your most useful Vietnamese phrase?
I mean, I think it has to be the one where. You know, the one I told you about, waking up early. The early beggars catches the money. I think that's always stick to me, you know, just in case.
That's a good one. Can you give us it in Vietnamese?
Ngay cả thằng ăn mày cũng phải dậy sớm.
Đúng rồi. That's the extent of my Vietnamese there. Now, I assume that you've traveled all over Vietnam, or a little bit, and... Obviously, you've lived in Saigon. So what's your favorite sunset spot in Vietnam?
I guess it has to be Da Nang.
And any particular place in Da Nang or just anywhere in Da Nang?
The beaches. The beaches in Da Nang are quite nice. And they're actually clean. They're pretty clean compared to like the other beaches in Vietnam, like Vung Tau. Also Da Nang, because it's where that part of Vietnam is where my parents are originally from. So, you know, there's a lot of attachment. So there's a bit of attachment to that. To that particular area, but yeah, it can be nice, you know. Especially you have Hoi An nearby as well. You know, just you go there for like a bit of history, but also some nice beaches. So it's a very nice place to visit during the summer.
And I don't know if you've been yet, but just recently, my wife and I we visited the Bana Hills with the hand bridge, and that was and the French village that they have on top of the mountain. Which seems like it would be really cheesy, and it's like it sounds terrible, like a fake French village, but it's actually really well done and it's really nice. And we had a great time, and the sunset, actually, we were up on the top of a mountain and the sunset was incredible.
Last time I was there was the last time I was in Vietnam. Like I went there back in August. I was actually doing a couple of shows there with Devin Gray. And I happened to have friends who was living in Da Nang, so I went on a trip with them. We went up to Ban A Hill. I think they were doing like an Oktoberfest kind of thing, like at the time. It was quite good, and actually it was the first time I actually saw the big Lord of the Rings hands. Pretty impressive, pretty impressive. I can understand why it was a social media craze back then. You know,
the pictures I'd seen before I went were. Really impressive, and it lived up to expectations. It's really cool. I don't really know what the thinking behind it was. I didn't read anything about why they designed that. For anyone who doesn't know, go look up Ban A Hills, and it's these two massive hands holding up a bridge, and it looks like it's really old, but it's really new, and it's quite cool, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And next question is perfect for you because you're one of the few guests who has experienced this the before and after. So I often ask this question, and it's an expat who's not been here for very long. But would you rather live in Saigon 20 years ago, which would have been when you were a young boy, young lad, or would you rather live in Saigon now?
I think because the question was like Saigon 20 years ago. I think 20 years ago at the moment is like 2001. Just crazy to think about it. I think at a point I was like 5 years old. I barely had any like living memory then. You know, like being 5 years old. Yeah, and you know, like especially I had a pretty comfortable. Even like back in 2001, I had a pretty comfortable, relatively comfortable childhood, a pretty comfortable upbringing. You know, things were still chaotic. But at the same, imagine, but I think, you know, the idea, but just me, like, being a 20-something person, educated 20-something person living in Saigon in 2001, I think it'd be a very different dynamic, you know, compared to living in Saigon now. Actually, it was just 10 years into opening up to, essentially 10 years of opening up to the world. There was still a lot of difficulties and challenges. And I think, imagine myself living, working in Vietnam, like 2001, I think it would have been very different. It would be something quite interesting challenge, but the center of opportunities, because everything's so new and raw. You know, internet just came to Vietnam at that point, so it's just, that's an avenue to so there's something to explore and something to invest in, you know, just in case. Even then, like KFC was still considered luxury. I guess, you know, like, yeah, I think going back to Vietnam in 2001, working as myself, then it would just be quite fun to do.
Mm. Yeah, I like the way that's a good way to look at it. It's obviously a different way to look at it for maybe that an expat would look at it or someone else. So, you know, that's interesting. I need to go back a question. I was going to ask you, what's your most useful English phrase?
Living over here, I guess the best one is grand. You know, it's just everything's gonna be grand. You know, it's just everything's gonna be grand. You know, it's grand. It's, I think that's a fun one. It's just the optimism, the blind optimism behind it. Is
the arm is falling off? How are you doing? Oh, it's grand.
It's grand. You know, everything's gonna be grand. You know, it's grand.
That's a good one. And then the final question is: what's missing from Vietnam apart from you? Don't say you. We know you're missing from Vietnam. So, but what do you think is something that's missing from Vietnam?
I guess the pubs, you know, just I think there's a lot missing. I mean, it's a difficult question because there are a lot of things missing in Vietnam, and they're also trying just having an actual British style or like an Irish style pub. Where it's actually, you know, it's the old, the cobblestone with the cobblestones and everything, you know, that with all the cracks. I think that's I would bring from Ireland to Vietnam, just the crack, you know, just the idea of the crack. Yeah.
It is something that is almost quite unique to Ireland and Scotland, this kind of pub culture. And I don't mean bar culture, this local pub culture where it's the same people that have been coming for 10, 20, 30 years. Yeah. They know the barman, they know everyone. And you can't really replicate that. You know, there's Irish bars here. And there's even one in Saigon. There's Irish bars around the world, but it's not the same as what you're talking about.
Yeah, if it's just the idea of the village pub, you know, it's just like one pub for one pub for the entire village. Everyone just gathered there, like a community. Like we have like community center, because in Vietnam, like in the village, the place where community gather, it's just like a temple. And you know, there's a lot, but at the same time, it's just very ceremonial. There's a lot of formality you have to follow, so it doesn't have that. You're just lacking that informality from just going to a pub, a village, or like a local pub.
It's funny you say about having one pub for one village, because if you ever go to Australia, and obviously they've got a reputation for drinking as well. I've travelled extensively throughout Australia, and you can go to this tiny, tiny little town with about 1,000 people in the middle of nowhere, and they will have 8 pubs. I'm not even kidding. You drive through the town and it's just like pub on one side, pub on the other side. And you're like, how does this tiny town sustain 8 pubs? But that's how much they like their beer in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Ireland, it's the same with like a village. I think in the Irish village, you have the same number of a pub as well. It's just for like a town of like maybe like 900 to 1,000 people. Like, you know, you have a church. I think talking to people, they always say, like, in an Irish village, you have, like, a clothes shop, a church, something, a community centre, and maybe it'll be, like, 30 pubs.
You know? That sounds about right, definitely. Yeah, the Irish, the Scots, the Australians, we're all pretty similar. So, listen, thank you so, so much, Nia. It's great to talk to you. I'm glad you're doing well. I hope you'll get back to Vietnam soon when everything sorts itself out and we'll be able to perform on stage together again. I'm looking forward to that. Before we go, tell everyone where they can find, I know we've mentioned it before, but where they can find the podcast, where they can follow you, how can they keep up to date with everything that you're doing?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So it's all at N @MAI comedy, and Habaka is @thehardpodcast VN. And we are on Facebook and Instagram, and also we are on all the major platforms: Apple, Google, Spotify.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much. If you don't normally wake up until noon, you can go back to bed for 2 hours now. So thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I will be speaking to you very soon.
It's been enjoyable. Thanks for having me. I hope to see you on the Hot Podcast.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Make sure you follow 7 Million Bikes wherever you can get podcasts. The same with the Hot Podcast as well. And you can follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I also want to use this platform to highlight some of the amazing charities in Vietnam that just do some incredible work. And I've been really fortunate over the last couple of years to work really closely with some of them. One of them that I'm a massive supporter of personally is the Blue Dragon Children's Foundation. They started in 2003 by Michael Brzozowski, an Australian man who was here and he saw the need to help street children in Hanoi. So because of that, he started giving English lessons on the street outside coffee shops. And then that has now grown into an amazing organization that helps provide families and children in crisis the chance to turn their lives around. They do incredible work around trafficking in Vietnam, which is a huge issue, helping to implement and change the laws and rescue victims of trafficking. So check out their website, bluedragon.org. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. If you can, please think about giving a donation, because they are one of the charities that are closest to my heart here in Vietnam. I've met with Michael and some of the team. I've used to work very closely with them, and they need everyone's support. So please check out the Blue Dragon Children's Foundation, and a massive thank you to them for all the work they do. Thank you to everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you haven't, go back and listen to previous episodes and stay in touch. A massive thank you to two of the members of 7 Million Bikes, a Vietnam podcast. Thank you so much to Brandon Thompson and Zion Johnson. Your support is appreciated more than you can imagine. So thank you so, so much. That is unbelievable. If you want to become a Patreon as well and get a shout out at the end of each episode, make sure you go to patreon.com/7 million bikes. The link is in the show notes. And if you want to buy me a coffee or a beer, there's also a link in the show notes for that as well. Make sure you check us out on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and also like and subscribe from wherever you are listening to right now so you can never miss an episode. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're like me, you may use your laptop at places where you have to use public Wi-Fi. This opens you up to digital snoopers. It's a massive problem. It can be your internet service provider, or you know who, looking at what you do online, or a cyber criminal trying to steal your bank passwords or credit card info, or even a hacker at the next table trying to steal your sensitive data. These days, it is vital that you keep your data safe. NordVPN keeps all of these snoopers away. It makes your internet activity private, protects you from accessing dangerous websites that are phishing for your data, and lets you enjoy your favorite content securely, even while away from home. And it's easy to use, even I could use it. I've actually been using NordVPN for years now here in Vietnam, and I'm excited to be an affiliate partner with them. I've used NordVPN to watch Netflix, BBC, Disney Plus with ease. And I also know that my information and data are safe from prying eyes, whoever they may be. Join now and you'll get 68% off and 3 months free when you go to my link, nordvpn.com/smb. Just again, for those hard of hearing, nordvpn.com/smb. The link is also in the show notes. I know nobody checks them out, but go check that out and you can get the link from wherever you are listening to this podcast. As an affiliate partner,
It also means that I will get a small commission when you sign up, but at no extra cost to you. So not only will you be getting a great deal through 7 Million Bikes, you get a great VPN and you'll be supporting 7 Million Bikes podcast. Stay safe online and enjoy the shows you love. Any questions, just let me know. You know how to get in touch with me. And thanks for listening to the show. Cheers.